your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Thursday night, July 31st, 2025, as we record this new episode. The 2025 Major League Baseball trade deadline is over. And depending on how you feel about the current state of the organization, you are either elated or a little bit confused. After the White Sox won an impressive series against the Philadelphia Phillies, Chris Getz had an off day to make some moves. He dealt Austin Slater to the New York Yankees, which isn't an org-impacting move, but as the clock ticked closer to the deadline, Getz was awfully quiet until dealing Adrian Hauser to the Tampa Bay Rays that featured a prospect package including former top 100 prospect Curtis Meade. That's it. Two players traded by the White Sox, and Luis Robert Jr. is sticking around. You might feel great about that. You might be uneasy about the White Sox giving Robert $20 million next year. We'll recap the White Sox trade deadline activity, share the other big trade news as the Minnesota Twins go full fire sale, and what our favorite trades were. Then the White Sox are back in action this weekend as they play the Los Angeles Angels. First, let's hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz about how the trade deadline went.
You never know how things are going to unravel and unfold. Obviously, there's interest from other teams that is needed. We had a fair amount of players that were asked about in deals, but we felt it was best to certainly keep the players that were not traded, and there were opportunities to invest into this organization for the future in the trades that were made. You know, I'd like to start with Adrian Hauser, and credit to him with his performance in a White Sox uniform. Underneath, you know, the performance, I'm really proud that we were able to identify, you know, some changes in what Adrian Hauser had been working on in his performance when he was in AAA with the Texas Rangers, and of course being able to convert on signing him and bringing him in here with you know, because he did have opportunities to go elsewhere, and then, you know, being able to provide the runway, and you know, more than anything, he deserves all the credit, but I was also very proud of us identifying him and being able to get as much as we did out of Adrian Hauser. And yeah, it was 12 starts, and to think that we were able to find three players that feel like we can be part of a Major League club in the near future, you know, that's pretty remarkable work overall, and certainly very grateful for what Adrian has done in a White Sox uniform.
When asked about keeping Luis Robert Jr., Chris Getz made it very apparent he's still a believer that the 2023 version exists.
I think it starts with Luis and how we feel about him. You know, and you look at what he's done in the last month, the month or so, and it, you know, he's impacting the game in so many different ways, which, you know, speaks to the talent that he have. We believe in Luis Robert, and you know, other teams have identified him as a guy that could help their club, and there was an effort to acquire him, but certainly it wasn't to the level in which we felt like, you know, kind of met the mark for us to move on from a talent like Luis Robert. You know, what he does defensively, offensively, you know, what he's capable of doing, and certainly on the base pass. You know, we just love Luis Robert. We do. And, you know, we've got more time, and we just didn't feel like it made any sense for us. You see what he's done here recently and impacting our major league club, you know, and you know, you look at, you know, some of our young players that are beginning to thrive at the major league level. I think Luis is part of that. And that was part of the calculus with, you know, maintaining, you know, most of this roster was, you know, have an environment for our young players to continue and have success at the major league level, and going out every night and you know, really playing competitive baseball and winning some ball games against, you know, teams that are in first place and yeah, leading divisions and are going to be playoff teams. So, you know, we really value having Luis Robert being part of this. We do. And, you know, culturally and environmentally with what Will has done with the staff and the vibes throughout the clubhouse, That was part of the equation and who we were going to move and maintain here. So, the Louis certainly, there was a lot of interest up until, the final minutes here. And, obviously we didn't match up, but I'm really excited to have Louis Robert in the lineup come tomorrow.
What about the $20 million option for Luis Robert in 2026?
Yeah, we anticipate him being here. We do. And if we felt otherwise, maybe we go a different course. But we feel like we're continuing to strengthen the infrastructure on the hitting side. We're not quite there yet. We're going to continue to exhaust our efforts and establishing ourselves as a top hitting environment. That's a big part of this offseason in the coming years. And we feel like Louis Robert's going to be a part of that, and he's really going to benefit with having the resources and the support that's needed. And most importantly, he's a talented player. You look at his elite bat speed, his elite foot speed. This is a player that we feel like has a lot of great days ahead of him.
Joining me to recap the trade deadline and look ahead to further White Sox roster moves this weekend prior to the Angels series is Sox Machine's beat reporter. It's James Fegan. And hello, James. The trade deadline is over. Austin Slater and Adrian Hauser were dealt, but Luis Robert Jr. stays. A little light on our expectations in terms of activity for the White Sox this trade deadline. Were you surprised with how the deadline went for Chris Getz and the White Sox?
I guess technically yes, because I predicted the over on like 4.5 players traded, and they as much as like hearing about the Hauser trade, apparently it was kind of really just done hours ago. last minute to get to two. As much as they don't really have a reliever who's intriguing outside of like for the trade purposes, outside of Taylor, who they signaled they wouldn't be willing to deal. You kind of always think one will go, even if Steven Wilson kind of passed through waivers unclaimed not that long ago, and I think everyone's seen the highs and the lows of the Jordan Leisure experience to understand why that didn't happen. But even like a small deal like Michael A. Taylor, is a serviceable fourth outfielder for somebody on an expiring deal, or Aaron Civale is an expiring deal, and you're even hearing like Jed Hoyer saying like, there weren't a lot of rental starters available. It's like, well, it depends on what your standards were. If you're looking for just a guy to give you like a mid-four ERA, Sox had that. So yeah, a little bit less. And also, and I think it probably is the answer for future questions on our rundown, is that everyone kind of assumed they were bluffing about Luis Robert until the very end. So that was part of thinking that there was a solid three who were obviously going to get moved, and we'd see one or two made people who we weren't necessarily thinking of, but could be options. And it's. In terms of like if we were starting here opening day, who was going to get traded? Like, I think we are. I'm pretty sure it was my article, but we wrote that like, hey, Martin Perez is going to be a nice veteran guy for the first half and then move. Or Josh Rojas is being pursued as a utility guy for contending clubs. He'll just be that in August instead of at the start of the season. Those are the kind of the guys at the start of the season you expect any move. Like, there's certainly small level rentals across this roster that just didn't really put themselves in position to be gets at the deadline or driving even the reason they're playing well right now. I think even at the time I was guessing I was leaning no for Tauchman, but that's another element of like the best performing like veteran player not really being on the market for them. So yeah, I'm a little surprised, but it's mostly just about Luis Robert in terms of they're claiming that they weren't done with him and that they're really optimistic, which, a little hard based on kind of 2 years of his offense being a mystery for how to fix it for them and not really believing that they were in a position to pick up a $20 million option, which they still got to do. They're still not saying, it gets said Thursday during the post deadline availability. We anticipate him being here. He did not say, Christopher Getz, guarantee you on my solemn word that we will pick up that option no matter what. If I could legally pick it up now, I would just to prove it to you. Stop short of that because that would be crazy. But that was probably the big thing that, that's what all the coverage about the team has been for months, is about where Luis Robert's going or what sort of package he would get. So for as much as like the whispers were kind of leading more and more, just both from the Sox and other teams, like, hey, they're driving the way that they're driving this bargain is not going to end up in a bargain. And the Sox saying, we don't care, we'll keep them, whatever. Still a bit of that, still a little bit of extra. Wow, they really did it at this moment post deadline.
Because my question to you regarding Luis Robert, and in this episode, we already heard from Chris Getz. Thank you for that wonderful recording, Chicago White Sox and James Vegan, for providing that. I always assumed Robert would be dealt because I don't trust Jerry Reinsdorf to pick up a $20 million club option for a player who has underachieved and is often injured. As we're recording this, Robert is dealing with a nagging abductor injury, like soreness, could be pulled at any moment. If he slips, if he runs too fast, he could end up on the injured list with a leg injury and may miss a couple of weeks in August and September. I just don't know. I don't know.
For what it's worth, post game Wednesday, I asked about that because he was pretty active on the base pass. He attempted two steals. He's going out and get it in the outfield. He said he's over it. He says like that's just like day to day thing that happens during the season. Made a lot of, but like it's not. He said it's done with. He shot down all of our like questions about this being your last game ever, too. So like, Robert's English has really progressed. He usually doesn't wait for translations of questions. And I think this is kind of the best of both worlds for ESL people, is that like when they understand it well enough to not have to wait, nothing gets lost in translation. They kind of do on their own, but they still speak in their native tongue. They tend to give very articulate answers. Whereas like a guy struggling to answer in his second language, that's going to be a bit more general and to the point. So I think his interviews are pretty good nowadays, but I asked him like, did you think about whether this would be your last game in a White Sox uniform? And he made some quip that sounded kind of like saying like, our last game of the season's in September.
So maybe he knew. He
And
knew.
then as we're breaking, like it's chaotic because there's a long rain delay. They're trying to get on the flight to Anaheim. But like, I might never see this dude again. So like, as we're breaking up, I shake his hand. I say, good luck. And he's just like, shakes his head again. It's like, he said something like, that's what you say on the last day. And then walked away. I thought like, well, I feel better having done it if I didn't need to than never saying goodbye to this guy. But like, it's just like, what are these people on? What's the general demeanor? So it fits that everything Robert said has been accurate so far. So maybe he's healthy as well.
So subsiding the injury risk, I again, until we get that press release, what, around Halloween, early November, that the Chicago White Sox have officially picked up Luis Robert's option.
5 days after the
I'm
World Series, I believe.
already predicting the World Series is going to end quickly. No. So let's say early November we get that press release.
The
I
White Sox
believe
getting
it.
exemption, a quiet period you're supposed to have during the World Series of making news to announce they're picking up Luis Robert's option. That would be perfect. Mid like game five.
Right during a pitching change in the ninth inning. I'll see it. I'll believe it when I see it. That's just, again, my distrust right now. It's not so much on the desire of Chris Getz. He has made it very clear. He wants Luis Robert around. It's his boss. It's not Getz's money. And he's not spending his own money. He's spending whatever money that the Chicago White Sox have. And it does lead to my fear now that Robert is with the White Sox going into the offseason. If they do pick up his option, a reminder, the offseason activity for the White Sox this past winter, signing Austin Slater, Mike Tauchman, Martin Perez, Michael A. Taylor, and Josh Rojas. Chris Getz only spent $12.65 million because that's all he had to spend. And he traded Garrett Crochet away to the Boston Red Sox, and we still feel like that's a very good deal that he got. But that was the White Sox offseason. Not a lot of money. You give Robert $20 million, James. My fear is that's the offseason. That's all we could spend, which is more than what we spent last year. But instead of bringing in multiple veterans to help plug holes and to help out with the team, we're just bringing back Luis Robert. That's my fear. So I'm hoping, and I tweeted this out, but I'm hoping that with this club option signals that maybe Jerry's got a little bit more cash to spend. So it's more than just the $20 million to Luis Robert, that they can increase payroll. Yeah, there. Yeah, exactly. So,
like, and I've seen this point made by other Sox people on Twitter, is that like maybe it's part of a roster that already looks a little like established. You got your catching duo.
Yeah,
you got, you know, Curtis Meade's going to be out of options, so I think he's going to be very similar to Miguel Vargas, where they're probably kind of give him a spot early in spring training and say this is yours. So if your infield is kind of Vargas, Meade, Montgomery, Mydroth, let's say Lenine is in there too.
Yeah, let's say so. So yeah,
like, sweep the dirt on all our caskets one day. And if you got Robert returning, you've got Benintendi. Not even a hint of that moving at any point in this deadline. And even the possibility of Tauchman returning, you know, not, he wasn't as committal about that. He more said, like, with Tauchman, like, we because of the extra RBI, we didn't have to make a decision right now. He didn't say, like, yeah, definitely lead off first at bat 2026 is going to be Mike Tauchman. But those are three outfielders. You know, you'd need a fourth, you need platoon partners and whatnot. And yeah, your rotation is Cannon, Martin, Burke.
Well, Martin's got a $10 million option. I forgot about that. Oh, you're talking Davis about Martin? Davis Martin. No, I'm sorry. Martin Perez. I'm sorry. When you said Martin, I was thinking Martin That's Perez. Like, I'm
good
sorry.
People at Frontline have done wonders. yeah, Martin Perez is an option, I suppose. But, like, you got the four younger pitchers and, you know, not immediate, but you've got a lot of, one, you've got, you know, Schultz and Smith, and you've got Mason Adams, Drew Thorpe, a bunch of guys coming back from TJ Kaibush. Maybe you're feeling like, I could see them adding like one more starter to the mix, but you certainly don't have to, like, they could easily feel like they don't have to add multiple starters in the offseason. Maybe your primary point of addition is just bullpen. And so that's like, hey, we pick up a $20 million option. We sign some relievers and we slap it together. Maybe they kind of feel like there's not already like a big hole that they're really going to address in free agency in some way, where Robert being the headliner of that effort fits a bit more than it's an indicator of, yeah, we're going to go ham in free agency, which I think is, believe it when we see it, from like a franchise history label, not just even like the current situation.
Right. Yeah, I see that point. It's just, that doesn't inspire. Well, I mean, the White Sox are 8-4 in the post All-Star break. So if you believe in this run, which we'll talk about later in the show when we preview the White Sox Angels series, you believe that this offense will always average 7 runs per game, then maybe that's a great plan. But I just, that's my biggest fear right now, is that they pick up Luis Robert's option and that's it. That's all the money that they have this offseason. And White Sox fans could take the offseason off, check back in spring training, and see how the White Sox do to have the season started. That's my fear. I like the idea of adding to the bullpen. I would like the White Sox to improve in some areas as far as in the team. Maybe Tauchman's better suited as a DH. If you still don't feel comfortable having Caro and Teal, I'm speaking this as a White Sox perspective, not podcasts or Sox Machine readers, because we hear you guys. You want Caro and Teal in the lineup every single game. There's just opportunities for the White Sox to make this team a lot better. And we'll talk about the other teams, what they did, especially in the AL Central, as far as the trade deadline. But it does seem like some teams are going to be in a free fall, like the Minnesota Twins. So if there is an opportunity to make two or three free agent signings to give yourself a better chance of being a 500 team, I think the White Sox should take it this offseason, especially with the uncertainty of the state of the league after the 2026 season and the CBA expiring. But that's just my biggest fear with Robert returning for the White Sox, is that's the extent of the offseason. In my opinion, it cannot be. But Robert is here. Hopefully, he does not get hurt in the final 2 months. Hopefully, he continues his excellent play. We don't really have to talk about the possibility of Robert getting traded in the offseason. We can revisit this conversation. The White Sox are still below 500, and teams are needing an outfielder. We can revisit this topic in a calendar year. But the guys that did get traded, Adrian Hauser, James, to Tampa? Question mark. Like, that's the destination is a little odd to me, because as we're recording this, the Tampa Bay Rays are 2 games below 500. They're fourth place in the American League East. They're 10 games back at first place, but they're only 3.5 games back of the wild card. They also traded for Griffin Jacks from the Minnesota Twins. So the Rays were like, hey, if these guys are still available, we'll take them. So they add to their pitching rotation and to their bullpen. But the headliner for the White Sox in return for Adrian Hauser, James, is Curtis Meade. What are the White Sox thinking with Curtis Meade? Because he is a former top 100 prospect.
Well, they think he's the raw ingredients are there. He's shown above average raw power. His contact rates, despite like all his strikeout rates being like over 20% in the majors, pretty good. They're north of 80. His one big issue was chasing, and he was like chasing under 25% this year. Not the great results in the majors, but he was chasing less, showing some ability. They feel he's been a tinkerer, that he's tried a lot of different setups and swings, and the mechanics are going all over the place. Obviously, he's changed his approach pretty radically this season. I think with the Rays, it had reached a point of like being a little bit like this guy's just inconsistent and can't kind of set himself on one plan. They're also very much in typical Rays fashion, they are very wary of their 40-man situation and getting stuck into out of option situations. The White Sox kind of view this as more of a cost of doing business. Like, yes, by next spring, Curtis Meade will report out of options. He's going to AAA right now, apparently. I thought he might go right in because, especially with not knowing like if Meidroff is able to play right away. He certainly seemed
Oh,
like he
good
avoided a
point.
fracture. The first base situation, they just optioned Ryan Noda. Tim Elko's on a rehab assignment. Like, Vargas is playing there, but it's kind of a weird setup where they're giving Lenin Sosa lots of run and making Colson Montgomery play a lot of third. If you gave third base Curtis Meade or second base, because he's played there too, all of a sudden you got, Vargas, Meidroff, Montgomery, Vargas. I already said Vargas twice. And Meade. These are seemingly four forward-facing pieces for them to go with. With all apologies, Lenine and what he's been able to do, and obviously being just consistent enough a hitter, kind of stay in the mix. But they kind of want to put Meade on a set plan and say, like, this is what we're going to do and stick with it. Stop moving around, stop tinkering. We believe in you, sort of thing, and hope he takes off. It doesn't seem like want him to kind of get comfortable with what they're doing first. So I guess that's why they're not challenging him right away. I would certainly expect him to be in Chicago during the last 2 months of the season at some point, and once he arrives, probably playing pretty regularly. But they view it clearly as like our deadline is to really get him right by the time he arrives in spring next year, because that's when we truly have to kind of put him in. But very much Miguel Vargas part two, both in who knows where he plays on defense at this juncture. Probably have to just give him a position and let him run with it and hope that the kind of latent talent. I think, like, offensively, he's probably a bit toolsier than Vargas was. At least in terms of like juice and raw power, like Vargas's hit tool maybe had more like devout lovers at the height of his prospectum than Meade, where it's a little bit like more 50-55 hit tool, and that will allow him to get to a lot of power. But Vargas is, I think you would see the athleticism and think like, well, this guy should be able to play defense somewhere, and then you put him like in left, I'm like, oh, not there, and then you put him in different places and get scared off. But always seemed like someone with the general aptitude to play decent defense. I don't know if Meade quite has that level of reputation. Gets said his defense has improved from their evaluations. We'll see what that means. But I think it's a very similar project of like, this guy has top 100 prospect talent. He hasn't been able to get runway in the majors, both not sticking right away, and his roster situation is preventing him from really sticking with the contender. This is our advantage. This is what we can do. We can offer playing time. We can deal with a weird roster crunch. We can give you runway. You will not feel like you need to change your swing every 6 weeks because you're losing your starting job on a really competitive team. That's the hope. And then they got two arms on top of it, which at least looks better. Even if I don't know
Yeah.
exactly what to project those dudes for, both seem kind of like future relievers of some stripe, but we'll see.
Yeah, those pitchers being Duncan DeVitt and Ben Peoples that the White Sox have added. Both of them also going to Charlotte. James, is that the plan, or one going to
Correct.
Birmingham? Okay.
I guess Meade doesn't turn 25 for another couple of months, but basically three 24, 25-year-olds, AAA types.
Got it. Going to Charlotte, at least to start. For Adrian Hauser, someone that the White Sox signed in mid-May, and again, I thought he pitched great for the White Sox. I thought this was a really good return to, again, Adrian Hauser wasn't on anyone's radar when this White Sox season started and was able to pitch well enough that the White Sox got a former top 100 prospect and two additional pitchers. Like, they got three prospects back for a couple of months of Adrian Hauser. I thought that was a really good move. By Chris Getz, and you got Bruce Levine of 6-7 the score, suggesting that you and the Chicago Cubs kicked the tires for Adrian Hauser. But I thought this was a good return for the White Sox for a couple of months of Adrian Hauser. So while I may not see Getz's vision with Luis Robert, or maybe I do, and I just don't buy it because we've been dealing with his boss longer than dealing with Chris Getz as the GM. I like this
I
move
see
by
the vision, I
Getz.
just don't like it.
And no, I not to return to the Robert conversation, but if I had more confidence that Robert, the 2023 version, was actually there within this player, maybe I kind of lost faith with how this season started for Robert. And yeah, he's on a hot streak right now. If he can continue this for an entire month, then yeah, I'll be back on the bandwagon. But iffy, mediocre play, Jerry Reinsdorf spending habits, I don't know. I just don't see it.
I want to know what the plan is for him to get right-handed pitching, or hit right-handed pitching again. Because the way Robert explains why he doesn't hit right-handed pitching well seems very like convincing to me. Like, I remember him coming back from the IL and having a good game his first game back in like 2022 in like Texas, and he first explained like, I was like, oh, what did you do to keep in sync? Because you look great. He's like, it's just always easier for me when the ball's coming toward me because they're facing a lefty that night. And then lo and behold, he like struggled badly in the next two games and looked like someone who had just come back from injury against righties. And he kind of reiterated again this year when we were like, oh man, you're having a big hot streak off after break. And he's like, when I'm facing lefties, I can just eliminate that low and away quadrant almost. Like, they're not going to be able to throw a breaking ball that's running away from me. Like, good changeup is just not kind of the same thing in terms of having to worry about the ball tailing away really aggressively from him. And having to be conscious of that is one a problem on its own as far as his chasing, but also makes him a little bit behind timing on fastballs. in a way. So what are they going to do to kind of remove that consciousness of that from him? Because I think we've seen it fully affected. I looked up the numbers, like part of his post All-Star break surge is hitting right-hand pitching pretty well, not for power, but I think he's hitting like 360, and also slugging 360 and walking more than he strikes out against righties since the break. Granted, that's 25 plate appearances, but it's a lot of like talking about Ryan Fuller and how the hitting infrastructure is on the way up and why that gives him more confidence and bringing in someone like Curtis Meade, Luis Robert, as much preseason as now. That's probably the biggest, most valuable potential beneficiary from that. So I want to hear how that's going to play up as much as, anything with Meade, or certainly more than I'm, more than I want to know what they have in mind for Gage Seal. As much as I do, I love my A-ball pitching prospects. How are they going to get
Yes.
Robert to feel like he can stay on right-handed pitching? Could mean a lot.
I'm looking at it right now. Against lefties this year, Robert has a 990 OPS. Against righties, a 539 OPS. He has three more plate appearances, three times more plate appearances against right-handed pitching than left-handed pitching this season. And with just how the league is set up today, with the amount of right-handed pitchers against left-handed pitchers, that ratio will probably continue to next year.
Which I thought would be like how they sold him as a role player to like a team like the Phillies, like, hey, you got all these left-handed outfielders,
Or the Dodgers.
but here's a guy who can come and whack lefties and play good center field defense and run the bases. Don't be fooled by the big line. Here's a very useful role player, utilized right. And the White Sox had no interest in a role player trade return, so here we are.
Silence isn't great for podcasts, but I did not know it was this bad. Like, if this doesn't, this is even including his recent hot streak that you mentioned, James, post All-Star break. These are his season splits. If this doesn't improve in August to September, again, just logically, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how you pick up that option, but Chris Getz wants to. And that will have to be the project with Ryan Fuller and Luis. You got to fix this. You can't have a 540 OPS guy, a right-handed batter. You're paying him $20 million, and his OPS against right-hand pitching is 540. Miles just light $20 million on fire. Just we'll see. We shall see. Austin Slater got traded for James's A-ball pitcher, Gage Zeal. You did find his Instagram story highlighting he went to PF Chang's when he found out he got traded and the
I think that
fortune
was the night
cookie
before he got traded. And
night
he was
before.
reflecting on his prescient fortune cookie.
Yes. So Slater joining the New York Yankees will help out with the outfield, and I'm sure he'll have big moments and he'll get an opportunity in the postseason, especially pinch hitting when left-handed relievers are on the mound. So we'll see how that deal works out for the Yankees. But again, a small move by the White Sox, but we are expecting that to happen. So that's the extent of the White Sox trade deadline activity. For the rest of Major League Baseball and how this impacts as far as the White Sox, like looking at the American League Central, Cleveland was serious about trading Stephen Kwan, but what their request in a trade return for Kwan is also very serious, and no teams were willing to meet that asking price. But James, the Minnesota Twins fire sale. Aaron Gleeman of The Athletic wrote that 38.5% of the active roster was traded at the deadline day, and they traded five of their best bullpen arms. And this team notoriously know now that they have hundreds of million dollars in debt. They traded Carlos Correa back to the Houston Astros for a 26-year-old minor league pitcher. They had to spend over $30 million. They're going to have to eat more than $30 million of Correa's contract to make that work so they can offload the other $70-plus million that was owed to him. The White Sox are 11.5 games back at the Minnesota Twins, but there's 2 months left to go in the season. Can the White Sox catch the Twins, James?
Maybe. I mean, that's a demoralized team, I would imagine, at least from both imagining it and what my friend Dan Hayes has reported about how they look. They're only 31 runs behind in, like, differential. No truth to the rumor that they sold some copper wiring they stripped out of Target Field to the Rangers for cash considerations. But, you know, we'll let you know if there's some confirmation of that later on. Incredible. I also like, I mean, I realize that their ownership situation is went kablooey. And I don't know if this was like Justin Ishbia's first act of pleasing White Sox fans is throwing the rival Twins into chaos the way that he did. I think it's more happenstance. But I as not as a fan anymore, but I think it's kind of sick in a way where I think teams kind of reap all the praise they get when they sign a star player to a big contract. It always feels like stomach turning when, like, a couple of years later they're treating that deal like an absolute, like, anathema, and like,
yeah,
we'll do anything we can to dump it. It kind of makes, like, all the praise they got sour. Like, Carlos Correa hasn't been perfect since they signed that deal, or probably quite up to what they envisioned, but it's not like he, you know, became like 2011 Adam Dunn or did something disgraceful in a way, or just fell off like the map, or just did anything that was beyond like a normal aging progression curve for him. So to see, like, because I was doing, helping out with Fangraphs deadline coverage a little bit, I was looking at the prospect that they traded for Correa. Yeah, that's a salary dump. Like, they didn't trade anything for Correa. It's just pure money. Very, like, I think it's amusing for Sox fans that they should, you know, revel in it. They've certainly gotten plenty of ribbing from Twins fans over the years that I'm sure they're eager to return. But I think from a broader baseball view, it's kind of dispiriting to see a team gutted that way, especially one that's, like, broke the playoff streak that franchise had, like, not too long ago in terms of, like, winning a series or winning a game. It just looked like they were serious about contending, to see them absolutely, like, tear it down to the studs. And because they don't have a new owner in place, you don't really know what even plan it's in service to. It's kind of dark stuff.
Well, that's what Gleeman wrote about. Josh Donaldson in 2020 was the largest free agent contract signing. They traded Donaldson 2 years later. Correa comes in, blows that record up. But they trade Correa with so many years and so many dollars left on the contract. It's something that Jim Margulis always points out. Like, I'm not sure why Jerry Reinsdorf is so afraid of these long-term deals. There's always a way to get out of these contracts. Another team, if your player's valuable, will be more than happy to take on the money, even if you are willing to eat like 30% of it. And the Houston Astros are getting Carlos Correa back. I was not expecting that. But yeah, the Minnesota Twins, 38.5% of the roster traded. Lots of new faces coming to the Twins. I imagine they're going to be very active, even selling into the offseason. If money is going to be an issue, I'm a bit surprised they didn't trade Joe Ryan. So they got Joe Ryan. Roster resource is kind of funny just looking at it. They only have three starting pitchers now. Their pitching staff is eight. Eight pitchers right now on the active roster for the Minnesota Twins. So lots of new faces joining the Minnesota Twins. Byron Buxton's on the injured list. The White Sox got a chance. It's a lot of ground to make up, but they got a chance to possibly catch the Minnesota Twins. They're 11 and a half games back with 2 months left to go. Maybe that's something to watch for. There were tons of trades, James. Tons of trades that happened before the deadline. It would take an hour just to recap all the moves that were made. But let's not do that. What was one trade that was one of your favorites that you saw before the deadline?
My grandfather on my mother's side and my father were both very active in the teachers union, so CTU. So I'm kind of pro union guy by nature. So I'm always amused when teams balk at players' salary and then have to then come around and realize, hey, to actually do what we need to do as a team or accomplish what we need to, we actually have to pay up for the talented players. So, having already discussed Carlos Correa back to the Astros after they lowballed him on an extension offer, now eating his huge contract to get him back so they can try to win. The other candidate is obviously just the Mariners trading for Eugenio Suarez
Yeah.
less than 2 years after salary dumping him. Poetic, beautiful. Although, like, everyone's happy to see him, so that's great. Like,
Yeah.
the in clubhouse vibes are just like jubilant, even though like the larger mechanics and my mental approach into the trade is goofy. Like, some level of our bad, can you please come back? Those trades, that's amusing to me.
Yeah, Eugenio Suarez to the Mariners. A week prior, getting Josh Naylor to build around Cal Raleigh. I thought that was good moves by Seattle because Houston was very active before the trade deadline. Even the Texas Rangers getting Merrill Kelly. They already have a very good starting rotation or a well-performing rotation this year for the Texas Rangers. The American League West is going to get really heated here in the last couple of months. That will make it really fun to watch. I like the Cedric Mullins trade to the New York Mets. I think that's a good addition. Mullins can bat in the bottom of the third, but to have his defense out in center field for the Mets to help cover some ground in right field and reduce the stress for Juan Soto out there, I like that trade. Even though I thought maybe Robert would go to the New York Mets, obviously that didn't come to fruition. But I do like the addition of Cedric Mullins to the New York Mets. But Eugenio Suarez was my number one as well, James, to Seattle.
Was it for comedic reasons or impact reasons?
Impact reasons. For you,
Both sides of the coin
comedic.
then.
Let us know in the comments section what were your favorite trades. Obviously, with Chicago Sports Radio, there's going to be a ton of angst to the Chicago Cubs for really not getting a starting pitcher unless they believe Michael Soroka, old friend, is a starting pitcher. There's a lot of teams that didn't make big moves. Maybe they should have. The Milwaukee Brewers are kind of quiet, even though they did pick up Jordan Montgomery, who just might be a shell of himself. Not a lot of moves in the
Well, he's
National League
out for the
Central.
year.
Well, he's out for the year. Okay, great. So, 2026 plans already looking ahead.
I think
Yeah.
he's an expiring deal. I think it's purely like eating the salary so they could get Shelby Miller for free because the return's a player to be named later.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, okay, that's an interesting trade. Let's see if Shelby Miller helps the Milwaukee Brewers. But the Brewers didn't do too much. I thought they'd add more bats. The Cubs didn't
They got
add a
Vaughn. What do they
third
need?
baseman. Yeah, they got Andrew Vaughn. Yeah, exactly. Andrew Vaughn's going to carry them to the National League pennant. The National League's going to be real serious. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch in the postseason. The American League West is going to be a lot of fun. And what? Should we just congratulate the Detroit Tigers and winning the American League Central? It doesn't look like anyone's trying anymore in the AL Central. The Tigers have a huge lead. So the American League, most of the fun's going to be out in the East and the West. But let us know what your favorite trades were. Or your most confusing trades that you saw before the deadline. We wrap up this episode of the podcast as baseball continues for the Chicago White Sox as we roll into the month of August. They are now having a West Coast trip. They'll be visiting Los Angeles Angels and the Seattle Mariners. So we get a chance to see Eugenio Suarez and the Mariners later in the midweek series. But for the weekend, the Angels didn't sell. They added a couple of relievers, even though they're 53 and 56 on the season. They're fourth place in the American League West. They lost their last game to the Texas Rangers. They are 4-6 in their last 10. The Angels this year are 28 and 26 in the season. And the last time the White Sox and Angels played, it was opening day. It was the opening series of the 2025 season. The White Sox won on opening day 8-1. They only scored two runs in the next two games, losing 1-0 and losing 3-2 to the Angels. So the Angels own the season series 2-1. Your pitching probables for this series, Friday night, 8:38 p.m. Central Time start. To be announced for the White Sox against left-handed pitcher Tyler Anderson. Saturday, 9:07 p.m. Central Time start, Aaron Civale against Kyle Hendricks. And then on Sunday, this is a 3:07 p.m. Central Time start. Sean Burke will take the ball for the White Sox. But that Friday night start, James, is Shane Smith coming back?
Yes. One, he is supposed to come back during this road trip. Two, Chris Getz said today, one, there's only one reason. Usually the reason you would have a TBA for starter is that there's a roster move pending, because that's the Shane Smith. Two, they have announced their other two starters, and Chris Getz said today that Shane Smith is coming back during the Anaheim series. So no one has said Shane Smith is starting on Friday, but it doesn't take advanced deductive reasoning to figure out that Shane Smith is starting on Friday.
All right, this let's get to see.
I could try to chase it down and text people like, can you confirm Shane Smith starting tomorrow? And I think everyone would be like, this is silly. Why are you bothering it? Like, isn't this clear? So yes, I believe Shane Smith. How many innings he gets? That's a good question.
Yeah.
Probably, he hasn't had a full rehab outing. He's had, he had pitched three innings of live BP and then he threw a bullpen. So if he was more 4-5 territory, I don't think that would be surprising. And who knows if he throws any outings much longer than that for the rest of the season. Leading some questions about Martin Perez is coming back, and you have Shane Smith back, but if you're shortening on him, if you're potentially shortening on Burke, if you're, God forbid, shorting on Davis Martin at some point, who else kind of works in their way into the mix there? But Shane Smith should be back on Friday.
Okay. On Martin Perez, how close is he returning to the White Sox?
About 2 weeks. He's going to have his first rehab outing on Saturday, and he'll probably need two more after that.
Okay.
So pretty close.
So that'll be the next road trip for the White Sox, visiting Kansas City and Atlanta. Okay.
I was not expecting 87 in a bullpen, which is basically his game velocity. So
right. I was not expecting Martin Perez to come back to the White Sox this season, but again, he has that mutual option. So both parties would need to opt in that $10 million contract for 2026.
Has a mutual option ever been picked up in MLB history?
I don't think so. No. I could be wrong, and I'm probably wrong, but it doesn't seem like it. Well, the one thing to watch for, and it was exciting to see for the White Sox, they had that huge late inning offensive surge against the Philadelphia Phillies to win that series against a very strong Phillies team. This White Sox offense, 12 games post All-Star break, the White Sox are 8-4. They have hit 23 home runs in their last 12 games. That's the fourth most in Major League Baseball. The White Sox as a team have an 852 OPS. That's the third best in Major League Baseball. The White Sox are averaging 7 runs per game in their last 12 games post All-Star break. Do the math. That's 84 total runs. The last time the White Sox scored 80 or more runs in a 12-game span happened between June 9th to June 21st. In 2022, so it's been more than 3 years since the White Sox have been this hot offensively in run production over a 12-game span. And I feel like against an Angels team that's not very strong, James, this can continue for the White Sox as far as this offensive surge. And it just seems like with your post-game interviews, is confidence building up? Are the players inside the clubhouse, the hitters, really buying into that this could just be more than good luck or good fortune, that they have found their offensive identity and they are growing in confidence?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's belief. There's certainly a lot of young players who are holding their own and then seeing things click for them that are kind of gassed up on what they're able to accomplish for the first time. I'm assuming that Wednesday was the first time both Teal and Caro have homered in the same game.
Yes.
If power becomes an element of them kind of already kind of holding their own offensively just on that bat quality, that would be big. I think a big determinant of this going forward is essentially Colson for real, because he's providing like all the power that was missing from this lineup, with five homers in his last, what, 7 or 8 or 9 games. If that's sticky at all, that's a dynamic they didn't have. They already controlled the zone pretty well. You might see a little bit of sacrifice that if you're seeing some Austin Slater at bats being given to Brooks Baldwin, but you didn't really see this offense get torn apart over the course of the deadline. You've already kind of shifted probably your biggest straggler, Josh Rojas, out of regular rotation at bats. Chase Mydroff was in a lot of pain on Wednesday, but so hopefully he bounces back quick. But he obviously has looked a little better and striking the ball a bit harder since the break. I think the season has worn on where you've kind of developed kind of a trusted group that you want to see out there on a regular basis. They are going to be a little bit less viable against left-handed pitching without Slater, but as Venable pointed out, like maybe that just means a lot more every day Andrew Benintendi and Tauchman. And Tauchman certainly held his own against lefties in a way you don't have to worry about. Benintendi's probably done that in the past. You didn't see as much stripped away from this offense as maybe you were worried about at the deadline. And I think there's still a lot of place for upward trajectory with guys like Teal, guys like Caro. Even I think Vargas, in looking at season numbers, there is all of a pretty bad April baked in there.
Yeah.
And someone who's kind of figuring out what he needs to do consistently going forward, like maybe that's a 110 guy, WRC plus down the stretch. So I think there's more arrow up. How much arrow up, I don't know. And there's certainly young players can get in their struggles their own, but I feel like there's a bit more potential to improve than imminent collapse in their offense. They're not going to stay this hot for months at a time, I would think. But I don't think it's like just pure nonsense or something where it's like established vets who have never produced this way before, flukily doing it for 3 weeks. Why are we even paying attention? But it's a lot of young players driving it in a way where you're seeing an upward trajectory from even they were at the start of the season. So yeah, it won't last forever, but it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, because again, the first 97 games, the White Sox had the worst team OPS in Major League Baseball, and they were averaging 3.4 runs per game. They have
We have
more.
a we, are we still doing a around the baseball segment? Or is that on Sundays?
That's on Sunday. Do you want to talk about? Is there something that
I just
you
want to
have seen?
acknowledge that the Braves had an 8-run 8th inning and went up 11-3 and now have allowed an 8-run bottom of the 8th inning, which old friend Dane Dunning contributed to more than I would like to see, and is now 11-11 in Cincinnati with nobody out in
Amazing.
the bottom of the 8th.
Wow. All right. Well, that's your Braves Reds update during the recording of the podcast, but I can't wait to check that out. That adds to the conversation, the comment section. But
I
hopefully the
guess
White Sox offense
that would explain what
continues.
both teams did at the deadline a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, sure did. Sure did. Well, hopefully the White Sox continue to score this many runs. Yes, it's going to cost me steak dinner, but I have no problem paying out a steak dinner bet. If this is how the young White Sox hitters are going to perform, because even though we're a little confused, a little uneasy, what the direction is picking up the $20 million club option for Luis Robert, who James has now scared me after looking up his splits against right-handed pitching. But if Montgomery is real with his torpedo bat and he can provide that missing power, if Vargas is more consistent and Teal and Caro are fighting their power stroke. Who knows? Maybe Curtis Meade can finally find a stance and a swing that works for him. And maybe Luis Robert figures out how to hit right-handed pitching. That's the type of performance and production we need to see in August and September to build up confidence that the White Sox are getting much closer to contending. Because since May 1st, they're playing more like a mid-60s win team. Still not great. But when he only won 41 games last year, That's a significant improvement, and they're already at 40 wins now. If they pick up another series win like they've been collecting in the post-All-Star break, in early August, the White Sox have already exceeded their win total in 2024. That's a significant accomplishment, and they still got a chance for those betting folks of reaching 60 wins in 2025. But that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. We'll recap that White Sox Angels series on Sunday night. And as James alluded to, we'll check in around Major League Baseball to see how the immediate impact is for those big trades. And we'll preview the upcoming series as the White Sox take on the Seattle Mariners. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also listen and watch the show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Sox Machine. We also have other videos that you could check out as well on our YouTube channel. Follow us on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James at JR Fegan. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. We are on Blue Sky, so if you're checking out that social media platform, we are at SoxMachine.com. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, you can sign up to become a subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at just $5, and that gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website, and also access to the comments section on the website. We do have some spots open in our Veterans Committee. So if you wanted all the juicy detail and dirt that James was able to gather leading up to the trade deadline to give us information of what the White Sox were thinking and what he was hearing, that is a possibility. You could sign up to be part of our Veterans Committee at SoxMachine.com. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.